Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about the ongoing 27th African Union Summit in Kigali, Rwanda. And with us tonight, my colleagues, Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service. Welcome to the show, Henok.
Thank you so much. Hello, Africa.
You're welcome. And another colleague, Vincent Macori, host of VOA's TV program, Africa 54. Thanks for being on the show again, Vincent.
As always, a delight. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is a regular panelist and friend of the show, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, the panelist and your listeners.
Welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much for inviting me, as always.
You're welcome. As I said, gentlemen, our topic tonight is the AU summit going on in Kigali. It opened a few days ago. It's the first time it's being held in Rwanda, and it has, this Rwanda now is getting to its feet now. It can host such a big summit. But the question on people's mind is, how different is this Kigali summit from the previous ones held elsewhere on the continent? Let me begin with where the AU has its headquarters.
You want to come to Addis?
Yes.
Well, how different? Usually what we have when African Union leaders get together is they are either trying to address peace and security issues over a country where there is a coup d'etat or a civil war, and there will be plenty of that with what's been transpiring in South Sudan and all of that. But there's one exciting news that really excited me. In fact, the Washington Post today published an article on it as well. There is a trade agreement that's being proposed. It's Africa's Continental Free Trade Agreement, which is, you know, an amazing progress in terms of a policy document. We'll see how they're going to implement it or how they're going to turn it into a reality. But it's an interesting blueprint for African leaders to discuss, and hopefully if they could turn it around and we can talk about the details of what that entails in terms of improving lives in Africa, improving trade between African countries. Right now we're looking at less than 14% of regional trade between African countries. So we'll see how the outcomes and the negotiation process of this trade agreement is going to be. But it's interesting.
I see. Vincent, talking of blueprints, the African Union and its predecessor, the AU, they have never lacked good blueprints.
Do you remember NEPAD?
Yes.
I'm delighted that you remember NEPAD.
Cynicism in full action.
Yes, there's so many blueprints. And the question has always been, how far do we go with the implementation of this? There's a lot of distraction that comes along the way. The ideas are great. The excitement is always there when these ideas are born. But the biggest malady, the biggest problem of the African continent is carrying through with this, because many a times these political leaders get bogged down by the political issues on the continent, the crisis, and they themselves within their own countries get so consumed in their survival politics, and such that any of this continental great concepts and blueprints get forgotten. And so for me, I get a little skeptical about this. It's okay to have something like this on the table. You just hope that some of the leaders on the table will stay on this issue and hopefully try to push it forth.
I see. Suleiman, before we get the nitty-gritty of the summit, talks of how they can solve crisis on the continent. The AU as a body has never been good at solving crisis on the continent.
Exactly. And even before I go to the conflicts, if we go back to the blueprints, we cannot forget the most important blueprint which has ever been put on the table for African Union, for the AU, the Maputo Declaration of 2003. followed by the one, the Malabo Declaration of June 2014. These would have been the most important declarations of policies, which, if you want to put it, to the continent, because as a continent, our biggest problem is poverty. Our biggest problem is underdevelopment. And where else can you help to eradicate poverty other than going through agriculture? But ever since the Maputo Declaration, very few countries have implemented the 10% increase for their budget for agriculture. Now the Malabo Declaration also is coming on the same. How many countries are going to implement all those declarations which they pass out? Mm-hmm. So, like my brother there, Macaulay, I too am very skeptical about the implementation part as far as the AU is concerned. Actually, if there was AU exit, I would actually support any vote for AU exit for any country in Africa.
Oh, I see. That's very interesting. Henok, talking of AU exit, among the issues at the table at this summit is the idea of launching of the African e-passport. This should make movement of people across the continent much easier. It may be a small step, but a significant one, according to some people, in knocking down barriers and opening up countries to trade and other exchanges. Going back to your point of the free trade area, do you think they can pull this one off?
No. That's a big no-no. And here comes my cynicism here. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Because when you talk about opening up borders for trade, it's not a question of identification. Mm. It's a question of building capacity and facilitating trade in such a way that commodities leave borders at ease. Mm. So it's a tariff, customs, an efficiency issue. It's not about a passport issue. It doesn't matter. For example, a truck driver from Ethiopia can cross into Somalia right now. It's not a problem as long as you have a document that shows what you're doing. And the drivers in this border towns, they understand. The issue is what commodities that they are carrying. There was a USAID trade hub study that was conducted between the border of Kenya and, I believe, Tanzania. It's the East African trade hub. And they calculated how long it would take for tomatoes to cross the border. Mm. 3 weeks. Is what
that would mean they would be rotten, as you say.
Exactly. So it's about efficiency, policy, and at the same time, having empowered and building capacity of these officers and offices that handle transaction between two countries. So that's where we should start.
You know, if you ask me, it's great to dream. And I think Africa, the African Union dreams a lot. The idea of a passport, a common African passport, is for me a real long shot. That is something that will come somewhere down the road. Mm. Right now, as Enoch mentions there, first you need to really work on those the trade blocks and make sure that they can function smoothly. Talk about the East African Community. Mm. Even right there, you know, the concept of just a common passport has taken long. Before you can have that kind of a passport that can allow people to travel all over the continent freely, first you'll have to ensure there is a level of stability that makes it easier for, you know, people to move from one country to another and for countries to be comfortable for a person to come into their country. Yes. I'm not so sure that, for example, Kenya is very comfortable having Somalis coming over, you know, using a passport that can allow them to travel and stay anytime. They have issues. There are security issues, political issues, regional differences that have to be smoothened out before you really can, succeed in this great idea, really. Mm. Great idea of having a common passport.
Suleiman, following up on Vincent's point here, it's important. It's a great idea, as he says. But how feasible is it when you have countries that are disparate at their level of development, their level of governance, because you have countries where they're like big giant jails. You have other countries where they are misgoverned so much that people are like feel like running away.
Why are you talking about my country?
Or your neighbor?
And then you have some small country, a few number of countries where there is a simplest, it's like a sea of peace and development and stability. So it becomes a bit of a problem that you have an influx of people flocking from misgoverned countries to some stable countries. Can in that situation, can you sincerely expect to have an African passport?
Actually, I've pulled out all the words out of my mouth. Mm. At the moment, Douglas, it seems Africa is getting more divided than getting united. There are lots of differences within Africa now, and the gaps are growing bigger and bigger. We have got very different political systems. We have got military dictatorships who have got their own way of operation. They obey no rules. They do what they want. They don't follow any rule. For example, as we are speaking, there has been a crisis between Burundi and Rwanda. Rwanda had just unilaterally deported over 1,000 Burundis and dumped them back into Burundi without even minding about the refugee conventions which are signed. So in so many of our countries now, the political systems are different. The economic development is different. You have got countries, you talk of trade. There are countries which don't have roads, where the development is not an issue to them. Mm-hmm. You find a country like Uganda, it does not even have goods to trade. Some of these goods, the farmers farm them, but they don't have even roads to move them from where the goods are to the main roads where there is some little tarmac. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of differences. At the moment, we are becoming more and more divided than getting united. And the AU, which is supposed to unify us, looks to be helpless. I think that is why our Dr. Zuma has decided to come back to South Africa, because I think we need her more than getting involved in the quagmire which is in the AU itself.
I see. Talking of all these issues of movement around the continent, passports alone may not be, it's a good idea, but on their own they can't do much. They can't lead to greater movement and trade among African countries. Because, as Suleiman mentioned briefly, Africa is in such an awkward state. Unlike Europe, where you can fly from one city, you can move either by train or by road or by air in Europe and go to 4 or 5 countries in one day. But in Africa, the interconnected infrastructure like roads, railways, air transport, flying from maybe East Africa like Nairobi to Gabon, you may have to change flight 3 times. Yeah. So without this kind of infrastructure...
Not if you're flying Ethiopian Airlines. Yeah. There's a difference.
Yeah, but let's face it. As I said, there's a lot of dreaming, but Africa is so far from getting anywhere closer where we can have that level of unity, that level of uniformity. Because when you look at the European Union, despite of Britain leaving, one of the things that made it possible for that to function, to have the Schengen passport, I lived in Europe, so I kind of get an appreciation of that, is there is almost uniform development across those countries. Yes. Some may be more powerful than others, some are smaller than others, but you go across, you have the similar infrastructure, you have similar levels of development. You look at the neighborhoods in Holland, you go to Germany, you go to Brussels, sometimes you think you're in the same country.
Yeah.
How can you make that kind of a thing happen on a continent, in a continent where there are such disparities in level in terms of development? So I feel bad that we have to be bashing the Africa Union, but my problem is actually the leadership in Africa is not realistic. The leaders who are at the helm of the Africa Union are not committed to anything that will lead to development of the continent, which is a pity for the people of Africa, because the people themselves are very hardworking, well-meaning, and they would actually take this continent so far if perhaps it was given into the hands of, civilians and forget about politicians.
Vincent, I agree with you. They're dreaming in terms of the common passport, but I think talking about a regional trade agreement and working towards the implementation of that, which actually takes a lot of time to start with, and there will be negotiations because, you know, mainly trade deals are negotiated individually between each and every country that's doing trade. So I think that's more of a realistic expectation on the side of the African governments.
But I know, talking of intra-African trade, it's a bit weird because they strike deals with the EU, they strike deals with everywhere. They never seem to strike deals among themselves.
Yes, and there is a reason for that. You talked about the infrastructural challenges that the continent has. Mm. We've talked about capacity issues and political division as well. Mm. Now, negotiated trade agreements, there's been examples over countries and continents that did not politically believe in the same thing, but they had trade deals. Because trade is about bread and butter for the most part. Mm-hmm. It's about what a country benefits, what another country provides. So it works for both sides, even though ideologically you're different. China exports a great deal of its products to the United States markets. The same happens vice versa to China. These are trade deals, not really based on ideology.
And I know, just before you go to Mohola, that is working. There has been, of course, we have a template for that, you know, like the East African Economic Bloc. Mm. We see things are happening. They're trying to harmonize the laws that govern trade there. It is working. We've seen the Southern Africa Comesa market, for example. We know ECOWAS and you know, the West African region are working. I think there has to be first a concentration on making those successful models, and then after that you can see how the different regional blocks could now start working together. Then we can achieve that level of African
integration.
Yeah,
I agree with you. It becomes a question of strategy at that point. But most importantly, I think from also attracting investment point of view, the African economy is $3 trillion of GDP, 1 billion people, and 54 countries, you know? So when you sell this to an outside investor, as opposed to Ethiopia's $4 billion economy, it gives you credibility in the marketplace that, you know, all the countries whose economy has been growing fast over the past decade can then now form a regional bloc where big multinationals can negotiate with individual countries through this framework. So it makes Africa more visible from that point of view.
I see. Just for those who are just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Tonight we're discussing the AU summit in Kigali. Our panelists are my colleagues, Henok Fento, VOA's Horn Service, and Vincent Makori, of Africa, host of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Suleiman, you wanted to jump in there, but these gentlemen have been raising the issue, in addition to responding what they are saying, Vincent talks of harmonizing all these trade policies and all that, and have these blocks move in unison and try to develop. The trouble they have had from experience, the South African community, one of the first blocks to be established on the continent, actually was doing well in the 60s when it was formed, I think, and it collapsed in the 70s. The main reason to collapse is because there was no uniformity in the governance of the three countries that founded the bloc. Now, the same story is true of today, because you find in a bloc there are countries that are democratic, dictatorial, put together. They even have the issue in some countries where one leader in the bloc is a life president. Others change their leaders regularly, maybe after 5 or 10 years. So in that situation, it becomes a problem to sustain these regional blocs. What's your take on that?
Precisely. On paper, the policies are so good, the harmonization is going on, but practically, because of the differences in the political system, many of these things cannot be implemented. If you go back to the East African community itself, as an example, recently they agreed to have one railway system, to have a transnational railway system.
Yes.
They agreed on that. Kenya started building. Uganda, Kenya is about to reach the Ugandan border. Up to today, Uganda doesn't even know what to do.
Yes.
So the policy was there, it was celebrated, East African, what. Uganda doesn't know what to do. Why? Because the political system is different. Their priorities are different. When they are in the rhetoric, when they are for PR issues, they stand, they sign papers, but implementation is different. Their priorities are different.
Yeah. I also think there is a level of which the leadership
commitment
is. There's a level of commitment, and also because when the changes occur, we are seeing differences in terms of how they continue. You know, the implementation of the prior agreed arrangements. For example, what happened with the pipeline from Malindi to Uganda? The process started, and somewhere along the way, Uganda decided it's going to do business now with Tanzania.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
So that on its own has sullied the relationship between Uganda and Kenya in some way, but also kind of brings issues about how reliable are those, you know, those signatures they put on the paper. I mean, they have this agreement within an economic bloc. And the next year, when a different leader comes, he decides, no, I'm going to do business with someone else. How do you resolve that?
That's true. The challenges and the opportunities, you can see them through, I think it's about 8 of these sub-regional blocs like ECOWAS and the East African community that we've had. But there's also, you know, as much as the challenges are there, there's also the opportunities, the positive stories. For example, Ethiopia being a landlocked country, utilizing ports in Djibouti, utilizing ports in Somaliland. Ethiopia is exporting hydroelectric power to Djibouti, and they're building a highway, an electric highway funded by the World Bank to Kenya. So there is also these positive stories. These came as a result of some of these trade deals between the two governments and investments that the two governments and the people have put forth. So the challenges are there within the regional blocks, and the opportunities are there. And I think when it comes to having a mega regional trade agreement, I think it's putting everything together. Like Vincent earlier said, we need to have the experiences that that we have learned from the 8 sub-regional blocs. And
I see. And another thing, this summit is the conflict hangs on over this summit in Kigali. The leaders won't escape this one because South Sudan is embroiled in fratricidal killings. And fellow Africans who are trying to help, some have got their own interests. So, as far as the EU is concerned, and this congregation of these leaders, if they can't, first of all, can they sort out this issue on their own? Or what should they do? Any of you can take.
You know, let me just jump in here quickly. As you know, we've said this for years. The problem with African leadership is that they have not come to a point where they can actually sit down their colleagues and say, we cannot see this happening on this continent. We are going to impose sanctions on you. You can't do. They have tried in some cases to appear to pressure, for example, South Sudan and South Sudanese leadership. But at the end of the day, they are very concerned more about maintaining some kind of good relationships among themselves to the extent that they actually end up letting some of this bad behavior slide. And they appear to solve a problem today. A few months later, we see it exploding because they do not really take it to the very end in terms of resolving it and having a common united stand against bad leadership, because many of them cannot stand up and really
they
have a problem with that. So they cannot push hard to demand good leadership in individual countries that are their neighbors and friends.
Inter-trade quickly. On the inter-trade, the latest scandal just a few days ago, Mugabe closed the border with South Africa. He has no food. He has no production, but he just closed.
Yes.
That shows you the mentality of the leaders whom we have on the continent.
Yeah, starving man closing the door to where the garden is.
Yeah.
So, Henok, before I leave,
my colleague was saying, even the institutions which we set in the AU themselves, they have not been able to work. The peer review mechanism, I don't know whether it is still existing. I don't know whether it is functioning. Nobody knows what it is. The peace and security. Sudan is burning. Burundi is burning. Ethiopia recently with Eritrea. There was a time when Senegal with Gambia, the truck drivers were suffering on their own. I mean, the conflicts are all over. In Uganda, human rights abuse. You have got policemen almost killing people on the streets. I mean, at the moment in Zimbabwe, the policemen are harassing people. I mean, these are issues which we are told will be dealt with by the peer review mechanism. They vote, the elections, all the elections we have had years down the line, most of them are rigged. People are changing constitution. They are doing what they are doing, whatever they want. They are obeying no law. They are obeying no constitution. Where is the African Union? Where are the commissions of the African Union? Nobody. We cannot hear them. So is it relevant or not relevant to the people of Africa today?
That's a big question. Now, before we have like a minute left to begin with you, Henok, is the AU too top bottom as an institution that, because it doesn't involve the people, that maybe it will never work? Or what do you think? Or it, maybe there's a future for it in just 10 seconds.
Well, it's an institution made up of several countries, and these
Is it made of several countries or made of several leaders?
Well,
several leaders,
several leaders, and you're coming to that point because institutions, they're not, the media is not well developed, the electorate is not empowered, so all this come into play, and it shows you clearly what's going on in South Sudan. You know, if you have all these institutions and the people want peace, we wouldn't be talking about two strong men. So that's the issue.
10 seconds.
Yes, there's potential. There is a hope. The structure is great. But as far as I'm concerned, there will always be a leadership problem. The politicians that end up being the decision makers at the helm will never take it far.
Can you use 10 seconds, Suleiman? Strictly 10 seconds.
Douglas, the AU chairperson before this one was Robert Mugabe, succeeded by Idris Deby. The current one is going to be Kagame.
Yes.
So that shows you the nature of leadership, the type of leadership whom we have on the continent.
I see, I get your point.
If people cannot lead their own countries, how can they spearhead the leadership of the continent?
Big question.
That is the dilemma the African continent is facing.
Big question, Abedna. Thanks, Admin. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our wonderful panel, Henok Fente, VOA Horn Service, Vincent Macquarie, host of Africa 54, and thank you, Suleiman Mugula, a South African best political analyst. Our producer, as usual, was Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight was the amiable Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.